and welcome to the Nature Garden Podcast with me, Carl Steinson, and the weekending show team from Lionheart Radio. It's a chance to take a wander down the garden path and country lane with the birds and the bees and the flowers and trees, and an opportunity to hear stories from the past and present. In this episode, we're enjoying nature's planting time and chi energy with Tom Pattinson. Tall tales, gunge and fox poo remedies, history brought to life at the Cresswell Peel Tower. And Tom Cadwallader looks into the names of geese and their wonderful Vanderlust. And an exciting rare visitor's been spotted in the county. Plus some top tips for the garden from Tom P. All coming up on the Nature Garden Podcast. It might be getting cooler here in Northumberland as late autumn rides in on a gale or two, but it can be a great time for planting. Tom Pattinson's here to tell us more.
As autumn approaches, there are some gardeners who clean their tools, put them away in the shed for the winter time, put the mower away, the lawn mower, and that's it. But there are other gardeners, many of us around, I'll tell you, who meet autumn with open arms because it allows us to do things that we couldn't do during that long, hot summer. Do you remember, just a few, 2 or 3 months ago, if throughout the country, temperatures up to 40 degrees Celsius, dry period, no rain at all, and some ornamental trees and fruit trees were stressed so much they started shedding their leaves. Despite that, we've arrived and had not such a bad fall. Deciduous trees, still some of them with their leaves and giving us such a beautiful display recently. But now those leaves have gone, we're looking at the temperatures. Air temperatures in the evening, they're pretty low. But you know, there's quite a bit of warmth, reasonable warmth remains in the soil. So if you put together deciduous trees going into a state of dormancy, having their winter sleep, don't know that we're around digging them up, etc., and the extra warmth in the soil persisting into November, no wonder they call this nature's planting time. Throughout the United Kingdom at this time, it's designated, 1 week is put aside for tree planting week. It's been happening for years. So it's a chance to do various things in the garden. Not put your tools away. There isn't time for that. I move plants around. I introduce new plants, deciduous and evergreen, to my garden, right across the board, fruit, ornamental, and I propagate from some of the plants I'm moving around. It starts off for me with one or two plants I've noted in one of the ornamental borders. One, for example, it's in the wrong place. It's just grown too tall and it spoils the chi, the balance of that area. So I can dig it out and prepare a hole for it in advance, a new planting hole, and take it across. And it's like musical plants at this time of year. And it will accept that because A, it's gone into dormancy, and B, there's a little bit of warmth in the soil, which encourages some early rooting, which gives it a head start for next spring when it takes off into growth. That's one of the things I can do. There's another plant I have in mind, which is a member of the sunflower family. And that one, it's been too aggressive. It's spreading. It's one of these invasive type plants, but it's a beauty. It's called Helianthemum Lemon Queen. And that more or less describes the beautiful petals in the dark centre, Lemon Queen. It grows to 1.5 metres tall, so it's quite tall, but it's super at the back of border. However, it's getting too aggressive. It's smothering some of the smaller plants nearby. So I have to dig it out, and I can do that now because it's nature's planting time. So I get there, start digging well away from the plant roots, and then get underneath them. And if it is too large to lift, it could be a small tree, then I can lever it with something out of the planting hole. And I don't have to lift it and put my back into a great pain. I can drag it to the side of the border, and I have a piece of material lying there, and I drag it onto the material, and that acts as a sledge, pull it along to the other side of the garden where its new site is for planting eventually. But I'm not finished with it yet. Here's a great opportunity for the simplest form of propagation ever. I can turn that one plant into several more. I get a spade. The centre of that plant is woody, becomes old very quickly and not as vigorous. But the periphery of that plant, around the edges, they're young, potential for young plants. Chop them off, bits and pieces, cut it up into pieces. And you've got every piece has some roots, a root system and shoots ready to go next spring. Hand some to your friends, replant some of yourself, or find a coffee morning where you can give them to charity, people in little pots planting them and buying them. That's what I'm up for at the moment. Now, if you're going to introduce new plants, you can also go to the garden centre and evergreens grown in pots. They'll grow at any time of year, of course, but you can put those in as well. A little bit more about this shortly.
As the great bird changeover time settles down a little bit in Northumberland, Tom Cadwallander from the British Trust for Ornithology's taking a closer look at the diversity of our magnificent geese and at their names, honks, and their epic travels.
I love autumn, me. It's a wonderful time of year. Birds are moving, and it's just really quite exciting. And one of the big deals for me is the goose or geese migration that we get coming through through Northumberland, through the northeast, and indeed the UK. Such a cosmopolitan place. We get so many birds coming through here from a variety of places. You wouldn't believe the places, but I really, really enjoy it. And geese for me kind of just does it, if you like. But geese can be quite daunting in trying to identify them, really. We have probably about half a dozen different species that we have coming through or spending time here as well. They're broadly split into two different categories. There are grey geese and there are black geese. That sounds very simple, doesn't it? But actually, it is when you think about it. But let's dwell first on the black geese. There are several species of them. And they're probably the most famous, if you like, or the one that Northumberland's famous for, is the Brent goose, and it's the pale-bellied Brent goose. There's two. This has got even more complicated now. There are two different races of Brent goose. There's the dark bellies and the light bellies, and they're coming from completely different places. But the pale bellies that we have coming to Lindisfarne, and one of the reasons Lindisfarne is designated a national nature reserve, is because of this species, this pale-bellied Brent goose. Now, the pale bellies will come from on the west coast can come from Arctic Canada, but the ones that we get are coming down from Svalbard, Spitsbergen, and there's only about 7,000 or 8,000 of them, and that whole population is split between Lindisfarne and a point in Denmark, and sometimes that. When the weather's really bad in Denmark, those birds will come over and we can have the whole world population of Svalbard or Spitsbergen pale-bellied Brent geese at Lindisfarne. Now, Brent geese are quite small, relatively small, not much bigger than a mallard, and they're really quite pretty. They've got dark black heads and white underneath or pale underneath, and as the name suggests, they've got pale bellies and the contrasting with the dark bellies of the other race. But they have this lovely little white fleck on their neck. And they've got this kind of lovely call. And it's great. I've been tucked away in certain places at Lindisfarne studying these birds. And you can hear them when they come in. They'll have this sort of noise they make when they're kind of gathering up. But it's great, actually. So that's a real big deal, like, you know, having Bren geese, these pale-bellied Bren geese. And the old name for Bren geese was Ware goose. Now, Ware is an old English and indeed Northumbrian name for seaweed. And the seaweed refers to the idea that these birds feed on zostera. Zostera is a seagrass, and when the tide's in, it just waves around in the sea. But when the tide's out, it just lies flat on the mud, and these birds will feed on that. So they're really sort of getting stuck into it, and it's one of the reasons they come here. But in recent years, we've been having dark-bellied Bren geese. Now, dark-bellies generally winter further south in the country, but in the last half a dozen years, we've been getting up to 300 or 400 at Lindisfarne, and it's quite interesting, that change of behaviour. It's fascinating. But another black goose that we get is the barnacle goose. Now, the barnacle goose is a really super little fella, and they're very similar to Brents, and the barnacles we get are coming from Spitsbergen, the same place as Brents, but these ones have instead of having a little black fleck on, a little white fleck on their neck, they've got a white face, so they stand out, a similar sort of size to the Brent. And the name barnacle refers to the idea that in the they're winter visitors, and in the old days the kind of common folk thought that the in the summertime, these geese turned into barnacles on the rocks. You know, those little kind of crustaceans on the rocks. They thought they turned into those guys, which is quite an amazing thought. But they are the winter visitors here. And they'll use the east coast as a flyway. And they'll come down from Spitsbergen, these birds. And they'll hit the east coast of Britain. And they'll fly down the east coast. And they'll hit the time gap, then cross over, generally, to winter on the west coast in Solway. And that's a traditional migration, birds using the time gap, using some geographical location, geographical feature to aid their migration. I was in northern Scotland last autumn, and I was in one of the great glens, the Strathdern, and I was watching barnacle geese coming down through there, and they were picking up the Strathdern Valley, and they were using that as a flyway and crossing over to the west coast to winter down in the, again, in the Outer Hebs, and indeed the on the Solway. So the barnacle geese, two fabulous little black geese. But the common one we'll see around the place is the Canada. Canada is a big one, and it's not non-native to this country. And it's as the name suggests, it's a bird from North America. And there's tens of thousands of them over there, and they'll have these great migrations across North America. But these birds, the ones that we have escaped from captivity many years ago, and they're now living thoroughly in the UK. And in some places, they become quite a pest because there's some really quite big herds of them. As I said, these are quite big black geese, long black necks, and they've got this white chin strap, which looks like a bit of a bandage on their necks. So yes, they're the three black geese that we have. And let's not get too more complicated about the black geese. But we do have grey geese. And the common one we see is the grey lag. The grey lag is the bird that has a big orange bill. And we see them breeding around the place as well. And interestingly, they are a feral bird as well. And they're breeding locally. And there's quite an interesting population in the Lake District. And some quite interesting local movements going on. But traditionally, we've had grey lags coming down from Iceland, and they will winter here. And we tend to forget that these birds will come from Iceland to winter here, and they'll join our kind of feral birds, and it's hard to tell the difference because they all look the same. But we do know that we have wild birds coming in here. But grey lags are quite a big goose, big grey goose with this big orange bill, and quite distinctive in its own way. One of the other grey geese that we have coming through, and they'll come through in big numbers, and one of my favourites are the pink feet, the pink-footed goose. And these are the birds coming through in sort of, start coming in late September through October and in November. And they'll come across high through our area, and they'll call, and the noise is so evocative. It's like yapping hounds, and they'll fly in big V formations, and they really are fabulous. And these birds are coming down from Iceland and Greenland. And they'll be coming down, and they'll traditionally they used to fly just over here and winter in North Norfolk, but now many of them will overwinter in the northeast and Northumberland in particular. Droege Bay, Lindisfarne, and Millfield is a really good place to see these birds. So yes, the pinkfoot, if you see them on the ground, they are much daintier than the grey lags. And indeed, they have got pink feet, but their bills are quite dainty, quite small, black at the base, black at the tip, and they've got a little pink band to them. Quite attractive little geese, and one of my real favourites. And indeed, they come down from Greenland. We've got some really quite good evidence of them coming down from far north. And just to top it off, we do get the odd rare goose coming in. And usually they're white fronts. And there's two populations of white-fronted geese. One's from the north, from the northeast, if you like, from Siberia. And they're called Russian or Greenland white fronts. And there's another population which comes down from Greenland to winter. And they generally winter on the west coast. And the Russian ones tend to winter south from us. And they look quite like grey lags or pink feet, but they're grey, but they've got dark markings on the sides, and their bills are kind of grey lag like, and they're kind of pinky orangey, but they've got big white flashes at the base of the bill on their forehead. And these birds have only come through in very small numbers into our part of the world, and they're more eastern Mediterranean, eastern European in their wintering grounds, down through into the Balkans, but we do get them in small numbers. But just shows, you know, we've got a fabulous sort of cosmopolitan population of birds wintering here. And really, we should never take it for granted. It's just a wonderful place. And to hear them flying over you, calling, it's just so evocative. I could, even just talking about it, I could feel the hairs on the back of my hands just sort of standing up. Wonderful. Take some time and listen.
Tom Pattinson's busy planting and enjoying the late autumn, aka nature's planting time. And fruit trees, plants and bulbs are all possibilities. But watch out for frost. Here's Tom.
If you've seen some soft fruit bushes during the year and you've got a hankering for making room for one yourself, it doesn't take a lot of room for a single fruit bush. And their return in the form of the crop is just brilliant. I'm thinking of black currants, red currants, gooseberry, that sort of thing. Or if it's, say, an apple tree, a dwarf apple tree on the M27 rootstock. If you planted any of those now, this is your opportunity. If you planted them now, it's almost guaranteed that next summer you will have your first crop and all summers beyond that. It really is worthwhile considering that. You may well have noticed also that bare-rooted plants, fruit trees, for example, say apples, if you buy a bare-rooted plant, it will be have just been put into a pot just to keep it stable until you get it home. They're cheaper than the same type of apple tree, which has been grown on in a pot over several months, sometimes years, to get to that stage. So if you do buy something that is bare-rooted, and typical example of this is roses. They always, at this time of year, you've ordered a few of them. They arrive packaged up, but there's no soil in the roots at all. Before you plant them, be sure to plunge those roots into a bucket of water and let them stand in the bucket of water overnight for a few hours, certainly, but I generally do it overnight so the plant is fully charged with water when you pop it in. And then the roots will get working straight away and form new ones. But you know, it's more than just fruit trees or ornamental trees we're thinking about here. Ornamental, say bulbs. We're planting bulbs at the moment too. It's a great opportunity to get them into the soil. People keep saying to me, is it too late to plant my bulbs? And this is November. And the answer is certainly not. I've planted bulbs. I've bought in the past a pack of bulbs and found them out in the garden shed December to January. And they're still in the pack. And if I left them there, they'd just be wasted. They'd just wither away. So I have to say, get them into the soil and take potluck. But certainly, just 2 weeks ago, we planted 8,000 crocuses, a team of us, in a local site nearby. 8,000 of them. And there was just the slightest tip of their shoots showing. So they'll be fine. and that's getting a little bit late, but November is fine for planting bulbs. When you're planting them, remember, up to about twice the depth of the height, so that the soil above them, when you've planted them in the hole, is twice the height above the tip. For example, if it's a little crocus bulb, which is, say, 2 to 3 centimetres long, when in that case, just probably 6 centimetres above it. And maybe a little less, but up to 6 centimetres above it. But if it's a tulip bulb or a narcissus bulb or a group of narcissi, make sure that there's at least twice the amount of soil as their height above them. Fine. Next thing you can do, or another thing you can be doing, and I do this most of the time during the winter, is repair edges on the lawn. If there's a broken edge on the lawn, I cut a square into the lawn, which is a small square, and with the broken edge, lift that turf and swing it round by 180 degrees so the broken edge is on the inside of the lawn and the fine edge is on the outside. And then you do a little repair job with some sieved sand and soil, and either put a little bit of new seed onto it or just let it fill in normally. That's a possibility. But the quickest way to put a lawn together now is with turfs. Buy turfs. They should be available at the garden centre. Put the turfs down and instantly you've got a green area to play on, utility area, your choice. And you can buy different types of turf, of course, but that's something to get on with at the moment. There is so much to do, so much planting to do. This is nature's planting time right here and now, but you can, in theory, you can introduce plants between now and the end of March. Unless there is frost around, beware of frost. Look at the weather forecast. If there's no frost forecast for 2 or 3 days, then get planting any time during the winter.
Volunteers make the world go round in so many ways. And when you marry up our voluntary efforts with an amazing project, well, the results can be simply awesome. Steve Lowe's been catching up with some of the crew at the Cresswell Peel Tower in Northumberland.
So you've just tried to get me to apply some Fox's Lard.
Fox grease.
Oh, okay.
Fox grease.
Well, Fox's Lard, basically, yeah.
Well, really, if you really want to know, it's lard with red fox Labrador hair mixed in for authenticity.
Okay, but that doesn't really matter. But yeah, it's a cure for baldness, apparently.
It is a cure for baldness.
Well, I'll take that. As red, obviously. Thank you very much for that compliment. Yeah, but it's a great little display that you've got here. What have you been up to with this then? What's all this about?
Well, this is a traditional 16th century Tudor woman's home remedy kit.
All right.
So, obviously, in the 16th century, you wouldn't be able to pop to the doctor if you had a headache or an upset tummy. And the apothecary would be a bit expensive. And up here in the north, and you've got your border reavers running around everywhere, you've got to look after them. So the wife's job would be to look after them and produce all her own remedies. So this is what I've got here today.
So what sort of stuff have you got?
What I've got is we have a little pot of this green gunge.
Yeah.
And this is a woundwort salve.
Okay.
So woundwort looks very much like a nettle and grows along the hedgerows. And this would be used as a pretty much an antiseptic.
Okay, so you've got things secure.
Yeah, this would be to for
cuts,
of course, cuts and scratches. Yeah. It wouldn't help if you chopped your arm off or anything.
No. But it cuts and scratches in the medieval period could be fatal, couldn't
exactly.
it? Because it didn't have antibiotics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what else have we got?
We've got a bowl full of plantain leaves here. And again, plantain, you'll see on the roadside.
Yeah.
And it's, again, a very good antiseptic.
Okay, so that's like a green sort of circular plant with ribs in,
it's a ribwort. You get it. You can get a long narrow leaf, or you can get a rounder, broad leaf as well. And it's antiseptic. Traditionally, it would have been chewed,
right,
and used as a poultice.
Right, I've got you. Yeah,
and it goes back as far as early records from Roman times.
Okay,
and the Romans went after their march would wrap it around their feet. And it would be a cure for blisters.
Oh, God, I could do with a bit of that then, I think. And in this jar, you've got some interesting little creatures.
We have, yes.
Uh-huh.
These lovely little, squidgy little friends. And these are leeches.
Leeches.
These are our leeches.
Yes. And of course, they're still being used nowadays.
They are. Medicinal leeches are very beneficial. People often squirm, but they are very helpful.
Yeah. Now, we just have to add to people that these aren't actually real, because we're not in the business of animal cruelty in here.
No.
But they look like they
are. For today's purposes, these are my leeches.
Yeah.
So, and again, in the 16th century, it would be quite common, if you couldn't think of anything else to cure, cut a vein.
Yeah.
Cut a vein, stick a leech on it.
And you bleed.
Bleed.
Bleed the humours out. Is that the right one?
The excess blood.
Yeah.
Yes, so that's it. Your four humours.
So bruising and things, that probably would have been a good cure, but for like general ailments.
Maybe not so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, that's great. Well, you've got loads of crab apples as well and pomander, so that presumably largely about the smell, is it?
The pomander, yes, it's an orange and it's stuffed with clove.
Yeah.
Traditionally, you would have this just as a pleasant smell because there would be lots of unpleasant smells around at the time. We also have some nosegays.
Oh.
And the nosegays are made with lavender and orange peel, and again, you could have your cloves. And they would be more of a something to ward off plague.
Right, okay.
And,
yeah,
in the 16th century, you had a lot of Black Death.
Well, we've had that recently, haven't we? It's called COVID, but a similar thing, really. But, this is all brilliant stuff, and it looks really authentic and adds a little bit of flavour to the peel tower as well. So thank you very much for coming along, Lynn.
Welcome. Yeah.
and you're all dressed up as well, which is even better. So that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
This is the Nature Garden Podcast with Carl Steinson, Tom Pattinson, Tom Cadwallander, and Steve Lowe.
Now, swifts are commonly associated with high summer, so it may seem a little odd to see one now. And that's what I thought the other day, overlooking the sea to the mainland, when I think I saw one. Tom Cadwallander's on the trail of the latest surprise autumnal visitor.
When you get to the end of October into early November, you tend to think that bird migration is almost done, but these days it ain't. We're still seeing blackbirds and thrushes coming in from Scandinavia. But this time of year, though, when swifts turn up, and they do, it's quite exciting. You know, our common swifts, the birds that breed in this part of the world, are long gone. By the end of July, early August, that we've seen the last of them. But just in the last week or so, we've had this amazing influx of a species called pallid swift. Now, pallid swifts are extremely rare, and they're Mediterranean by origin. And there's been an unprecedented influx this last week or so. Even over sea houses, there's been three or four flying around, amble three or four flying around, and several others knocking around. One in Belfort has been reported as well, up and down the place. Now, these birds should be in Africa, but they've been picked up by this southerly airstream, and they've been deposited in the north, and they're now making their way south. They can fly vast, vast distances very, very quickly, swifts. They're really masters of the sky. They're so exciting. So, yes, these pallid swifts. And as the name suggests, they're paler than the common swift. And the wings are just slightly thicker at the base, near where they join the body, just slightly thicker. And the tail is slightly different as well. But the paleness is something that stands out. They're quite difficult to sort out, and sometimes the light is not very helpful. But they if you get a decent view, you can actually see how pale they are. And they've got a bigger chin. Patch, white chin patch, so they can sort them out that way. But it's caused an awful lot of excitement, I can tell you. They're a really rare bird, these pallid swifts. And you think, so yes, if you see a swift late on in the autumn, you think, well, this is something special. And indeed it is. It will be more likely or not be a pallid swift. So yes, it's had the birding scene all agog. You know, standing in the streets of our small towns. Last weekend I was in Amble, and there's a great throng of us bird watchers standing, watching these pallid swifts flying around. Just behind the harbour they were. Great. And so, yes, it's the migration is not over until it's over. Wonderful. What a time to be bird watching. Absolutely fantastic.
And to the sound of War Blackbird, here's Tom with some things to be getting on with in the garden.
So it's jobs for the week time. And one of my big jobs at the moment is pruning shrubs, but not all the shrubs. These shrubs in the garden give me colour all the year round. They flower at different types, at different times of year. So wouldn't life be simple if I could take one day in the year and say I'm going to prune every single shrub and that's it done? It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. If I went out now and I pruned the beautiful golden, well, it has golden flowers in about the May period. If I went and pruned it now, I'd be robbing myself of the flowering stems because the stems have grown through the summer since I cut it back, pruned it directly after flowering time. It sent up new stems, they've ripened, and they're ready to flower for me next May. So don't prune your forsythia at the moment. Wrong time. Buddleia is a different matter, the butterfly bush, or should I say Buddleia, they've changed the name a little bit, but it's still the butterfly bush, which attracts so many pollinating insects. Yeah, generally pruned back to about knee high, for me, knee high every winter at this time, because it grows from that in spring, it shoots off growth, and it goes to 2-2.5 meters tall. If I left it like that, the winds would catch it. It would become far too brittle. The wood would age very quickly, its stems, and it would snap off. So I must prune it every year at this time. Lavatera is the same. Lavatera Barnsley. There's a white, there's a pink flowering one. Beautiful, long flowering period during the summer. But it's very brittle. It gets tall. So this time of year, that again, I prune it down to knee height at the moment to stop the windrock loosening the roots or the whole thing breaking apart. I'm also pruning, but not as severely, the Weigella. Weigella, I have a beauty called Weigella Florida Variegata. Beautiful foliage, variegated foliage during the summer, but it's a deciduous plant, like the previous two, Buddleia and Lavatera. It's deciduous. It has pink flowers when it flowers about the May-June period. Beautiful, about the size of 50 penny piece. I've been cutting a third of the growth from that. And another one, Escalonia. Again, it's semi-evergreen, this Escalonia. So it gives a bit of colour on the leaves during the winter. But unfortunately, it needs a bit of pruning back. But I'm doing that now. I'm also pruning some of the fruit bushes, the small bushes, the gooseberry, the blackcurrant, the redcurrant, cutting the old, a bit of the old stems, the old wood out, and encouraging new wood in each of them. The gooseberry in particular, don't let the centre of it become congested, otherwise you'll get mildew in the centre of the bush. So they're being pruned at the moment. I'm also putting that aside, all of the cuttings or the prunings, they're not being wasted. Some of them are going into the composting, my hot bin composter, good material for composting. The rest of them, small pieces about 30 centimetres long of the current season's growth, which is toughened up, they make beautiful hardwood stem cuttings. That's the Buddleia, Lavatera, Weigella, Escalonia, and the fruit bushes, even the gooseberry. They'll go in, press them in, make a trench, slit trench upright into the soil, the depth of a spade's blade, and push them down so that 3/4 of them are actually buried beneath the surface. Just a quarter of the stem is showing. Get your foot in, your boot in, to firm the soil, leave them, and they'll root between now and next year. And you've got new plants, free of charge. In the greenhouse, I've got a leaf lettuce crop started off, just germinating, and they'll see me throughout the winter, even though the greenhouse is unheated. Also at the time, I'm waiting for the grapevine. We've had good crop again this year. I'm waiting for it to lose its leaves. That's when it's gone into dormancy, and the sap won't run when I cut the stems. That's just about ready for pruning. Apart from that, I'm putting a few colourful things into the containers outside the house. dwarf shrubs, perhaps one or two of those I'd put in. I've got round, and certainly the winter heathers, and for one or two violas, and finally some dwarf narcissi, make a beautiful, attractive sight during the winter. Whatever you're doing in your garden, enjoy it this week.
You've been listening to gardener Tom Pattinson, birder Tom Cadwallader from the British Trust for Ornithology, and Steve Lowe from the Cresswell Peel Tower Project. I'm Carl Steinson, and don't forget you can listen back to all the previous reports we've done on the Nature Garden Podcast. That's the Nature Garden Podcast. Enjoy your gardening and time outdoors with nature. Bye for now.